You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
A locomotive sipping, drinking Arizona. Mixtape just around the corner. Did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like Songa, man. My songs gon' break through like a running back.
Hello and welcome back to the first Canadian Grand Prix race recap in over 3 years. Kind of crazy. Mark Daly here, joined by Tim Haraney at Mark Daly F1 at Tim Haraney. And I'm a little bit struggling to get that out. Man, it has been a long time since Formula One has been driving around the street. Well, not the streets, but around Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. And boy, was it great to see. Tim, before we get into what happened over the last 3 days at the track, what was it like to be back in Montreal for Formula One? I mean, the atmosphere looked great all weekend long.
Yeah, it was incredible, Mark. Just to see the fans coming back was really special. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things about this race is the fans. They are, I mean, Canadian fans are incredible because they're knowledgeable. They know this race inside and out, and they know the storylines coming in. So, you know, Mark, like it's funny, like, cause we talk about, you know, like take Fernando Alonso, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. In qualifying and puts it like P2, like the fans know that that's a big story.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the entire place just erupts. Okay. Like I'm sitting in the media center and I can hear 200,000 fans losing their minds in the rain.
Yep.
In the rain, Mark, like this place was sold out in the rain. The fans still showed up. That's why the drivers love coming here, man. They just love the fans. The nightlife was incredible. I didn't get to experience too much of it. I was really focused on trying to do a really good job this weekend, and I was staying at the track late, and I was trying to go through all of the audio from whatever single driver said to the written media as well. So I would stay late. You know, the TSN crew would go home, and I would stay there probably till like 9 o'clock at night, just sifting through articles, reading as much as I could, getting ready for the next day because I wanted to do a really good job. And the nightlife, when I got to experience some of it, it was incredible. Like I've never seen this place just so alive. I mean, you could tell that people wanted Formula One back.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it was awesome to see. Just I couldn't help but notice it every time I tuned, especially on Sunday afternoon. The weather was great. It was much better than it was for qualifying. I mean, qualifying looked like my hometown of Vancouver. It looked wet, miserable, cold, like it's been all spring long here. Mm-hmm. But then on Sunday, when I tuned in to watch the Grand Prix itself, to see that the skies had cleared, to look like, you know, it is only a couple of days away from the first day of summer, I'm like, this is what it should be like. And just to see those stands packed, I mean, it didn't look like there was an empty seat anywhere. It was fantastic to see. And especially at the end of the race, everybody like emptying out of the stands, running up to start finish there just to take part and enjoy the podium celebrations was really, really cool.
Yeah, just seeing the fans every morning too, coming across the bridge. So you know how you have to like turn on to the bridge to get onto the island, to the racetrack? Well, every morning, starting Thursday, it was packed, 8 a.m. because we were there. Like I was there long days. Like I was there for 13 hours and like 8 a.m. we're going across this bridge and it is filled with fans at 8 o'clock in the morning, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fans. Like if you go over to my Instagram story, you see it because I posted some videos of it. But oh my God, that absolutely amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
That's cool. But did the rain dampen spirits at all on Saturday? It didn't really look like it. I mean, it looked like everybody there was still having a blast, even though the weather was horrible.
It was freezing. I was freezing cold, man. But it felt like it was going to snow at one point, but everybody was in great spirits. Like everybody was just there having a good time. Like, you know, some probably inebriated more than others, but they were still having fun, man. And that's what makes this race so awesome.
That's awesome. What were your personal highlights of the past? Well, I know it's not just the past 3 days. God. Like you said, you got in there, what, Tuesday night? I mean, you must have quite a few good stories to tell. You must have seen quite a bit.
Mark has so many. It'd be this whole podcast if I told everything, but
pick one if you can.
I did my first ever grid walk today. Cool. On Sunday.
Wow.
First
wow.
ever grid walk. So I attempted a Martin Brundle grid walk. And let me tell you, I have huge respect for Martin Brundle and his grid walks after trying to attempt one myself. I did pretty good.
Yeah.
I did pretty good, but I didn't do like Martin Brundle level. I actually passed him. I was doing mine and he was doing his, and his was way faster than mine. Like he was like zooming down, down the grid, dude. And I was just like, you know, slowly walking, checking things out, you know, explaining what's going on over here, explaining what's going on over here. I would say that was probably the coolest thing, because like we were right on the grid, man, like right on the grid. And the cars were coming out of the garages, and as they were leaving, the fans were cheering so loud for some of these drivers that they overpowered what the cars sounded like.
That's amazing. Hey, gotta ask you, like, one thing I always notice, it doesn't matter when you're around like boats or aircraft or cars or race cars, there's always like a, you know, certain kind of smell that you get around them. Was there anything that you noticed or just walking up and, you know, up and down the grid there that really stood out for you about these cars? What was it specifically?
Yeah, no, great point. It's a fuel for sure. You can smell it.
Yeah,
you can smell it. It's actually it's pretty strong. You know, it reminds me of IndyCar's ethanol base that they use. That's what it reminded me of. I know it's not like they're not exactly the same fuel sources, but it was close to that. It was really strong. And what else did I notice? I would say that's about it. I mean, the tire rubber, like once the tires got warmed up, they did have a bit of an odor to them as well. That was interesting. But yeah, I would say the fuel, the most thing I could really tell.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it now. I mean, there's plenty of things to talk about.
Yeah.
And as we just mentioned, I mean, Saturday was just, I mean, it's great from a storyline point of view, because when you have bad weather like that and the way that the track really evolved, I mean, it was raining, then it seemed to sort of slow down in Q2. And then you started to see a dry line really starting to form in certain parts of the track into Q3. But when you look at the qualifying classification, I mean, you've got a front row of Max Verstappen and Fernando Alonso. First time in a decade that Fernando's been on the front row. Then you've got a second row of Carlos Sainz and Lewis Hamilton. Then you got K-Mag and Mick Schumacher in the two Haases on row 3. Then you got Esteban Ocon and George Russell on row 4. And then on row 5, you got Danny Ricciardo and Zhou Guanyu rounding out the top 10. And then, you know, it's just all over the place. You got Sergio Perez crashing out into Q3, going on straight on in where was it turn 4, putting it into the Tech Pro barriers. And well, I mean, he was kind of struggling a little bit, but there was a lot of things going on. And then Charles, of course, with the grid penalty, and he just did what he needed to do. But I mean, Fernando, as you already mentioned, I mean, that has to be the story, one of the big stories of the weekend, because he really, I think he caught a lot of people out. I mean, unfortunately, that story didn't perpetuate. They were never going to have the pace in the race. But just walk us through that whole story about Fernando qualifying in P2 on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really special. I mean, Fernando had looked incredible all weekend long. Like, it just wasn't qualifying on Saturday. He looked great every single day, and or every single session, I should say. And if we go back to Azerbaijan, just the momentum I think the team had from that particular race, because the Alpine did show really strong pace, and to have Fernando be as quick as he was in Montreal, I think is a really positive step for them and the upgrade that they had brought in Azerbaijan and how that's paying off. And And I think this is the job. This goes so deep with this team, like the job that Otmar Szafnauer has done to really come in and turn this team around. I think that's something that really goes unnoticed. At the beginning of the season, this wasn't a really great team. I really thought that, okay, here we go. You know, it was like, it reminded me of the old Renault days where they pumped a ton of money into the car and it didn't even do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happening here where it was like, okay, they pumped a ton of money into this Alpine car and it's not even going to do anything. But in fact, it's quite the opposite. They've actually done a really good job of just chipping away at this and trying to get a good, quick, consistent car. Their straight line speed, Mark, is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have like this old hand like Fernando Alonso, you know you got a steady set of mitts there to put the car into. And I think for him, you know, he's made a really strong argument why he should be back at the team for next season, Mark.
Oh, totally. I mean, he's driving great. I mean, it just goes to prove, I mean, if you're motivated and you're good shape, I mean, there's, you know, age is almost, it's not as a big of a factor as it may have been, say, even 10 years ago. But I think that Alpine is quietly be doing a very, very good job and maybe flying under the radar. I mean, you look at Esteban, he's finished every single race. He's been in the points 7 out of the 9 races. Fernando, he gets in the points in Bahrain, very first race of the season. Then he kind of goes on this bit of a rough patch. He has 2 DNFs and then 2 finishes outside of the points in Australia and Miami. And then last 4 races, starting in Spain, he's been in the points. In Esteban, he's been in the points 4 out of the 5 past races. And, you know, they had a pretty, pretty good finish here on Sunday afternoon. Esteban finished 6th. Fernando, sadly, eventually ended up in 9th. Didn't really quite turn out. But, I mean, on the when you put it together, I mean, they're slowly kind of creeping up through the Constructors' Championship. They're currently 5th, and they got 57 points. They're only 8 points behind McLaren, who had a pair of drivers who didn't get into the points on Sunday in Montreal. But that was it was great watching qualifying because, you know, like you say, the reaction of the crowd. I mean, the reaction of us watching at home was like, oh my God, I can't believe that he did it. It was just and it's funny too because Fernando is one of these guys. He's a polarizing figure, and I think that people either love him or hate him. And he's one of these guys that, you know, he's obviously very opinionated. He's still obviously a very talented driver, and despite all the drama and stuff that's kind of followed him through his career, I can't wish for him to do badly. Like I was excited to see him, put it on the front row like that. I thought it was a really, really good story, and it was good to see the both of them bring it home, both in the top 10. And then Esteban, qualifying 7th, I think is a great story, but you know, maybe that goes to show that, the Aston Martin story is still to be decided, but certainly I think that by Otmar leaving Aston Martin and going to Alpine, I mean, that was a great signing, and I got a ton of respect for the guy. I think he's really dialed in. I think he knows what it takes to run a Formula One team, and I think that, being in the right place, in the right situation, I think that he can do a lot of good things in Formula One.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just picking him up was great, and it's interesting to see the relationship between Esteban and Fernando. I mean, both are very competitive and both push each other a lot, especially in today's race. You know, I think there was a point there where Fernando was kind of lobbying for some team orders to try and get Esteban to get out of the way for him. But at the end of the day, obviously Fernando having the technical issue that he did have with the car, and then obviously getting slapped with that 5-second time penalty that put him even further back in the finishing position. I mean, for Esteban, just, you know, I was talking to him about it and I'm pretty much asking him, you know, like, how far can this car actually go? Because you guys have been so competitive lately. And I think, you know, for them, the sky's the limit, I think, for this car. Like they are super positive on just how fast it can make this race car this season, Mark. I mean, that was one of the things that he pointed out to me the most, was just, you know, how far this thing can go for them. They are actually on a really good trajectory at the moment.
Yeah, that's definitely a story we're going to have to follow going into Silverstone and for the next race. But I was just looking at the qualifying time. So Max, who qualified on pole, his best time in Q1 was a 132.219. His best time in Q2 was a 123.746. And then by the time we get to Q3, his pole setting time was a 121.299. So that's just incredible over the course of that 1 hour qualifying session, just how much that that track speeded up. But, you know, the one thing that really stood out to me was in turn two going into the Senna S, because when you come down start finish, you got that little flick, that little dog leg to the right, and then they bring it back hard left to go through the Senna S, then back through, right, and then around that way. But there was a big puddle there, and it did not dissipate throughout the qualifying session. Just talking maybe from a driver's point of view, when you're used to taking your line and you get, I mean, obviously rain and inclement weather is something you just need to deal with, but it didn't take those guys too long to realize this is something that we need to stay away. But how, do you have any indication of how big that puddle was? Because it looked very significant, even on television.
Yeah, it was. It was huge, actually. And that is what deterred a lot of the drivers from jumping on slicks in Q3. And that's what Daniel Ricciardo had said to me. He was just basically saying, like, he was thinking about it. Like, he was actually thinking about going on to slicks at that moment, but he said it was just that puddle at the apex of the left-hander there. I always call it turn one, but I guess start of the Senna S's. He was just saying that, like, that section, the Senna S section, he said it was so sketchy because you just didn't know where all of the grip actually was. He said the rest of the lap was fine. He thought that, you know, you could possibly get away with a slick tire, but it was once you kind of got to that S section, he thought that, like, that was going to really throw somebody off. And then, of course, obviously it did with George Russell, who I'm sure we'll get into in a minute here. But Mark, it's things like that really do throw a driver off and have them make those decisions of whether or not, like, hey, should I jump off this intermediate tire and jump to a slick?
Well, I mean, we saw quite a few guys having excursions off the track during qualifying, which is to be expected. Some of them, fared better than others. But, I mean, do you want to set that up? I mean, you already mentioned George, so why don't you walk us through what happened with him?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, talking to George afterwards, and I basically asked him, you know, what happened there? You know, what were you thinking? So if you go back to, it's interesting, though. If you go back to 2021 in Sochi, George was the first driver to jump off of the intermediate tire to jump onto the slick. And that's what got him that P3 starting position for the Russian Grand Prix in 2021. And in his mind, he was thinking the exact same thing, because I asked him, you know, was this your decision or the team decision? He's like, you know what? I was thinking about Sochi 2021 and how I made that move, and I thought I could get it done here. He's like, because I didn't come here to start eighth. He's like, I came here to get pole position, and that's what I was going to do. And I admire that he was that honest with me. because some of these guys were just, you know, they weren't, like, I wasn't getting the full picture. But George just came straight out and just said it to me. He's like, look, man, like, I was trying to go for pole. It was a bad move. You know, I messed up. It was the wrong decision to make because the Senna S was still really sketchy. But at the same time, I mean, you have to take your hat off to him. At least he tried. Yeah. He was open and honest about it at the same time. I think for George, if he had stuck that lap together, he would have got pole. I think he would have got pole for sure. No questions asked.
Yeah. I mean, that was, is one of those things. It's if you can pull it off, you can make it stick. You look like a hero. Yep. And if it doesn't, then, you know, it just, it was one of those things that didn't work out. I mean, so obviously Fernando was a great story in qualifying. Max was a great story in qualifying. Sainz, I mean, the three of those guys. But I mean, Max was quite a bit ahead of everybody else. But, you know, you get
the Haas is actually, Mark, we were, yeah. So I was stationed in the bullpen, and beside me, there was like a tarp, and behind the tarp was the Haas hospitality area.
Okay.
And, you know, usually it's kind of quiet in there during, you know, during sessions and stuff like that. But at the end of Q3, when both Magnussen and Mick solidified their starting positions, you know, P5, P6, that Haas hospitality area just erupted, dude. It scared the hell out of me because I didn't know what was going on. And then I was like, oh my God. I'm like, and I looked at the TV screen and I'm like, oh, that is really good.
Well, you know, so totally. Yeah, absolutely. And they've got every right to celebrate that, because when you have like such a mixed up grid, I mean, you got Bottas that's qualified in 11th. He's usually this year, he's qualified a little bit better than that. You got Lando, who had a pretty rough weekend all the way around. I mean, he had problems with, what was his power unit on Saturday? I can't remember exactly what the issue was. I mean, he only qualified as high as 15th. Obviously, Charles only qualified 15th. I mean, he was going to take that big penalty anyways, and he was going to be starting at the back of the grid. And then, so, I mean, everything was kind of mixed up a little bit, but I don't want to take anything away from them, because that was a really, really good, that was a good moment. So we've talked about some of the winners from qualifying. Some of the ones that you know, fared obviously a little bit worse was obviously Charles, but we knew that going into to the weekend. Sergio Perez only qualifying in 13th. I mean, he parked it into the grass, and then I guess kind of got buried into the Tech Pro barriers, but it was going to be tough, even if that car wasn't wedged into the barrier. I mean, to try and get it off that really greasy, grassy area was going to be kind of tough. Yeah, Lando, we already mentioned. I mean, we got to talk about the hometown boys here. The two Canadians, Lance Stroll, Nicholas Latifi, they qualified right down at the bottom. I mean, Yuki also was back there, but he was going to take a grid penalty as well. So,
passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Kind of a rough start. I mean, it worked out, you know, obviously Lance's race and his race strategy was on point, because it worked out pretty good for him on Sunday. But walking away from qualifying on Saturday afternoon, I did not have, very many good vibes for either Nikki or Lance.
Yeah, the qualifying for both of them definitely a struggle. I think for the more surprising one was the Aston Martin, because of how fast Sebastian Vettel was in free practice three, but it turns out it was a bit of a tire pressure issue with the tires they were running for Q1, and that's ended up really how they didn't make it out of Q1 was because of that. You know, it's just interesting hearing from Lance. This car has some pace, like it has some pace, Mark. It has some good quality pace too, and I think if they can just figure out a sweet spot with it, I think they can really surprise some teams here. Like this is a really good car they've made here. It's just trying to get their heads wrapped around it. And I think for Lance, it's up to him to try and start learning a bit more about what it likes and what it doesn't, because, you know, it's Seb who's getting to that before Lance is. It's not that Lance isn't talented. It's actually that that Seb is actually getting to the setup that works best for the car and for him. And it's taking Lance a little bit longer to explore other areas, because we will see in some sessions, the two of them are quite close. And then the next session, one is, well ahead of the other, while the other seems a little bit lost. And so I think that's at this moment where that lap delta comes into play when we're talking about those two teammates of Lance Stroll, Sebastian Vettel. But, for qualifying purposes, yeah, the team was extremely disappointed with that one. You know, obviously so too Nicholas Latifi, but I think Nicholas knew what this weekend was about. And this weekend was about just keeping your nose clean, keeping your head down, trying to do the best job that you can with a really difficult car. This car is not good. I mean, I know Alex Albon is showing quite well at the moment. There are certain things that Alex is getting that Nicholas isn't, but at the same time, Alex is driving really well. And then for Nicholas, it's just trying to get the confidence, and not only that, but just trying to find what works best for this car and his driving style, because the two of them just aren't matching up. But for Nicholas, I think, for qualifying, just like I said, keeping his nose clean. I thought for the most part, with a really difficult car, I thought Nicholas did a pretty decent job.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you, I mean, there's been some talk that Williams are looking at bringing something completely different to try and maybe make this car a little bit more competitive, a little bit easier to drive. Do you have any details on that you can share?
Yes, I do. I have some details on that one. So they will be bringing, from what I learned, Williams should have an upgrade for Silverstone. I believe Alex will be getting the upgrade, and I don't think Nicholas will be getting that upgrade. I don't think Nicholas is getting that upgrade until a little bit later in the season. Could be Austria. And for that, it's that car is going to look a lot different from the people I've spoke to. It's going to be completely different, and that sucks for Nicholas, because not getting that upgrade soon enough. That definitely hurts. He needs to have a good. He needs to have a good back half of the season here, and we're coming up to the halfway point soon. And I think for Nicholas to have a chance to stick around in Formula One, he needs to have a good second half to this season. And by good, I mean he needs to blow Alex out of the water. But I think if this upgrade they are bringing is supposed to be as good as it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Then yes, I could see Nicholas doing that for sure. I mean, he is competitive, and people are going to roll their eyes at me, and they're going to call me Homer, call me all this other stuff. Oh my God, whatever. Trust me, I know. Like, the guy's talented. Okay, it's just not working for him at the moment. Take a look at Daniel Ricciardo, for example. That car did not work for Daniel Ricciardo, and he is a race winner, multiple race winner, and he is just, and I mean just, starting to get to grips with that race car. And let me tell you, Zach Brown even made mention that they've actually had to do a ton of adjustments to have that car meet Daniel halfway with his driving style.
Oh my gosh.
I'll tell you what's going on at Williams. That isn't happening. Okay. It's Nicholas having to try and find his way through it.
Yeah. So that's tough.
It is. It's hard.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a look now at the race itself. So let's go run down the top 10 in the final race classification. We've got Max Verstappen winning, Carlos Sainz coming back or finishing second for Ferrari. Got Lewis Hamilton, second podium of the year. And Lewis was actually able to get out of the car unassisted this time without the degree of pain we saw a week ago in Azerbaijan. So that's obviously a good thing. They got George Russell coming home fourth for Mercedes. You got Charles Leclerc finishing fifth in the end. Esteban Ocon in the first Alpine. Seventh was Valtteri Bottas for the first Alfa Romeo. Then eighth was Zhou Guanyu. Ninth was Fernando. And then 10th was Lance Stroll. We'll give a special shout out here. You just mentioned Danny Ricciardo. He came home 11th, which was much better. I mean, just again, as I mentioned, it was a tough qualifying session for Lando. He only came home in 15th. Obviously, just a weekend weekend that Lando would want to forget. There was only a couple of cars that weren't classified. Yuki Tsunoda, obviously getting a little bit too excited coming out of the pits and then putting it into the Tech Pro barrier in the Senna S there. Mick Schumacher retired on lap 18. And then lap 7 was the big one. Sergio Perez in the Red Bull. Maybe we should talk about that a little bit, because the gremlins and some of the mechanical bugs that we saw earlier on in the season from Red Bull seem to have disappeared over the last number of races, but it came back up on Sunday afternoon. And Sergio just all of a sudden pulling up there on the around the back of the circuits. What can you tell us more of that happened? Well, first with Sergio, because that's the big one, but Mick Schumacher was almost a very similar case and retired at the very same corner, which was a bit coincidental.
Yeah, and then we had all the stuff that happened with Kevin Magnussen too. I mean, it just wasn't a good day for Haas, and yeah. I know the team obviously disappointed. Gene Haas was here this weekend. He was on hand to take it all in because, you know, they qualified well. I mean, they showed great quality pace, and Kevin had that bit of wing damage from his scrap there with Lewis at the start of the race, which put him further back in the field because he had to come in and get that changed. But at the end of the day, I mean, this team is extremely disappointed. This is another race weekend where they don't collect any points.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking to the team, you know, coming into this weekend, that was the goal. You know, it felt like a drought to them that they hadn't scored points in a while. And that's interesting to hear when we're talking about Haas, a team that's, you know, finished in the back for, you know, quite a while now. And they're now disappointed by not consistently being into the points. And so I found that quite interesting. You know, I think for Mick, the qualifying that he did do was very impressive. I think it's good for his confidence, but not finishing a race, that's not good. That's just not good for him.
Yeah.
His value in the driver market is depreciating. It is going down. From the people I spoke with over the weekend, I mean, it's going to take some, you know, some pretty good performances to kind of pull things around for Mick, and you know, for him to have a spot on the F1 grid for 2023. And again, like I was mentioning, same thing with Nicholas, another driver that is struggling. He's had some huge shunts, huge. Like he's had. And extremely expensive. They're costing the team a ton of money. And so for Mick not to get this finish at the Canadian Grand Prix, yeah, just, Mark, extremely disappointing for the team.
Oh, well, totally. I was just looking at their results for the year. So the closest that Mick came to getting into the points was at the very first race of the year in Bahrain when he finished 11th. Then, of course, he had that massive crash in Saudi a week later. And then since then, the best result that he's had was a 14th, and that was way back in Australia. But out of the last three races, I mean, he crashed in Monaco. He didn't finish in Azerbaijan, and then he retired again, obviously, this afternoon. And then you look at K-Mag. I mean, three out of the first four races, he finishes in the points. Since then, his best result is a 14th, and then he retired in Monaco. I mean, today he was a 17th, and, you know, obviously having that wing damage in the black and orange flag so early in the race, and then, you know, you throw in a couple of virtual safety cars and the safety car proper later in the race. It was going to be an uphill battle for them. And it's disappointing, obviously. I mean, they've shown at times that they've got pace. I mean, obviously, as we talked about a little bit earlier, I mean, they had a wonderful Saturday qualifying, and then Sunday is complete polar opposite to what their Saturday was. I mean, they're second last in the constructors. They have 15 points, which is only 1 point behind what Aston Martin has at the moment with only 16 points. But yeah, disappointing nonetheless. Where did I go with my notes here? I was just there was something else I wanted to point out from the. Oh, yeah. Let's just kind of talk really quickly. That's what it was. Just about the two McLaren. So Ricciardo and Lando Obviously, that's a bit of a different story. Ricciardo had a slightly better weekend than his teammate did. I mean, if you look at their results over the past couple of races, let's go back to Monaco. Ricciardo finished 13th. Lando was 10th last week in Azerbaijan. Ricciardo was 8th and 6th. And then, oh, pardon me, I'm looking at the wrong ones here. So Ricciardo was, I'm looking at Vettel here, pardon me. Vettel, where do we go? Completely missed up here. Yeah, this is professional, isn't it? So Lando finished 6th in Monaco, 9th in Azerbaijan, 15th this afternoon. And then you look at 13th, 8th, and 11th. So we were just talking about how like the team has made these significant adjustments for Daniel to try and even meet him halfway, mm-hmm. to try and sort out some of the issues that he's been having. But I mean, still, I mean, he's only had one points finish this season. Well, he's had two, but this is his first, the only two that he's had was in Australia in his home race in the Azerbaijan. And then today, just making it out of, or just missing out on the points. Where do we sit now with Danny Ricciardo? I mean, this to me, I kind of go back and forth, and it's just, I feel like we're having the same conversation now that we had a year ago. The only difference is that this year, both Ricciardo himself and his teammate Lando are learning the car from scratch. Whereas last year, I mean, this was a team that Lando had already been driving for a couple of years, and Danny Ricciardo was coming in brand new. Whereas he come into the new regs, the new cars, and everything, so they're learning at the same time. And you have these vastly different fortunes compared to each other. Because I mean, Lando 7th in the drivers' championship with 50 points, and then Ricciardo is 13th with 15 points. So that's a big delta between your two teammates, that are supposedly, should be, I mean, I know that Zach Brown was really touting them as one of the top driver pairings in Formula One for this year, right?
Yeah. I think for Daniel, it's just chipping away at this, just chipping away at trying to get that confidence to push with the car. And I think he feels like he's getting there. He said he doesn't feel like he's there just yet, but he is getting there. And I don't think, Zach Brown has lost faith in Daniel Ricciardo. I mean, I know that there were press clippings that Zach had said about Daniel, and I think he stays at the team. I don't think they're interested in moving him around anywhere. I think he holds out and stays another year. I couldn't see them getting rid of Daniel. Mm-hmm. Lando, on the other hand, I mean, horrible weekend, just absolutely atrocious. I think, for him, that's a weekend he wants to forget. It's just one of those ones that didn't even happen, right? and that's the sense I got by talking to him on Sunday after the race. It just was like, let's just get this one over with and put it in the back of my mind and move on to the next. But for McLaren, they aren't quite sure just yet of how and where their car actually works, because, it works well. And some tracks it works well, and other tracks they still haven't quite figured this thing out. And I think eventually they will. Obviously, it's McLaren and they know what they're doing. But at this moment, just struggling a bit. I mean, I don't think you come into, if you're McLaren, you don't come into the Canadian Grand Prix round 9 of the championship and lay an egg. I mean, you just don't. You're McLaren, right? You should be close to the top 5 and or the top 4 even in this championship, fighting it out. So, yeah, Mark, both drivers at the end of this one were extremely disappointed.
Well, they are 4th in the Constructors' Championship, but they're a country mile behind Mercedes. I mean, Mercedes...
But
well,
in the race,
yeah.
Even what just I'm on the
track.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Like on track. Like yeah, for the Canadian Grand Prix, it's what I'm driving at. I mean, by now, you should be... The pecking order should be a little bit more consistent with that. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, compared to where they were last year, I mean, you would expect that they're not, fighting it out with like the AlphaTauris and the Alphas and stuff like that. And you know, it's crazy. I mean, if you look at the constructors now, you have Red Bull on top, 304 points, and you got Ferrari 228. So, I mean, you know, that gap is decreased a little bit this weekend. Obviously, Ferrari had both cars in the top five, and then Red Bull, of course, only collected points for Max. Then you got Mercedes third with 188 points. So, I mean, they've been collecting points slowly but surely. And then you got McLaren, like I say, 65 points. They're only 8 points ahead of Alpine, who now have 57. Then you have Alfa Romeo, they have 51. AlphaTauri 27, Aston Martin 16, Haas at 15, and then Williams, at least they got points this year, which is not something you can always say, you know, like almost halfway through the season, they got 3 points, but yeah, just a bit of a rough one. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the individual stories. We'll talk about Red Bull first. I just wanted to run down the top five in the Drivers' Championship. You got Max on top, 175 points, 129 for Sergio Perez's teammate in second, Charles Leclerc, 126. Boy, that gap between Charles and Max got really big, really quickly. You got George Russell in fourth with 111. Carlos Sainz has 102 for fifth. And Lewis now 77 points. And Lewis will be one of, I think, another kind of feel-good story from the weekend. Just a couple of quick facts that Mr. Hamilton put into the notes here that he so kindly did on an evening that he's not even here. So we'll show him a little love. So one of the facts that he pulled out was Canada was the 15th pole of Max Verstappen's career. And that's, you can compare that to 26 career victories, which includes Canada. He also dug out the stat here that this was Alonso's first start on the front row since qualifying in pole at the German Grand Prix in 2012 when he was still racing for Ferrari. So let's talk about Red Bull now. We'll start to talk about the individual teams. That was exciting. The last, what was it, about a dozen laps or so, you had the safety car after Yuki put it into the wall, and it was pretty good. It was pretty exciting. I mean, full credit to Carlos Sainz. He did everything he could to try and get close to Max Verstappen, but Max just had that little bit of an edge because, you know, I'll be honest, I didn't think it was going to be that close after the safety car. I just had this image in my mind that safety car was going to go off the track. We're going to go back to racing, and Max would pull out a couple of second lead. But I mean, Carlos was just hanging on the back of his gearbox. Never actually got to try a pass on him. But it was good fun. Wasn't exciting as it was in Saudi between Charles and Max, but it wasn't far off of it.
Yeah, I think for Carlos, just trying to get some heat generated into that that tire. I mean, obviously he had fresher tires than Max did at that point in the race.
Yeah.
And I think for him, it's just trying to slowly build the heat into the tire before he could start attacking, because Max did open up, you know, a bit of a gap. And then I think for Carlos, it was just trying to put as much pressure on Max as he possibly could to get him into making some sort of a mistake in those final laps of the race. You know, I'd asked Carlos about this following the race, and, you know, I said, hey, like, you know, do you think the team put you on the right tire for that final stint there? You know, and he was like, you know, that's something the team and I are going to have to talk about, and we're definitely going to have to take a look at that. And that speaks to me that, you know, hey, maybe they should have thrown him onto that medium tire compound there at the end to have a real go at Max. But you know, take your hat off. It's good for Carlos. I mean, it's good for him to get a finishing result like that. I mean, obviously he's still really hungry for his first ever win, but at the same time, I mean, he needs to build the confidence. Like he's had a rough season. Like he's got to build that confidence up. Right. And I think like a finish like this in a weekend that he's had and good qualifying, you know, I think that's a building block to things to come for Carlos Sainz. And for him, I mean, that's the most important thing. You know, I know he said that he thought he was the fastest guy on track, you know, that weekend. But I mean, I don't know. At the end of the day, I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, Max was, and we'll get to Max in a minute, but Max was absolutely incredible. I don't think Carlos was catching him, Mark.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, I heard the comments that Carlos said as well, that he felt that he was the fastest guy on track. But, you know, that's subjective. But the one takeaway from those comments was that he was full of confidence. He felt like he could push the car. He felt he could get really close to the walls, you know, when he
that's
needed
important.
To. That is important to know that you can push your car as far as and as much as you need to, and know that the car is going to do what you need it to do. But I was just looking here at Carlos's stats for this year. So he's second in Bahrain, third in Saudi, and then he has that real rough patch there, goes into the gravel on what was it, lap two or lap one in Australia.
I think he only did like, what was it, from Imola to Australia, he'd only done, what was it, like 1.5 laps or something
like that. And then he has that Imola, then he has in the chicane there, he has that little bump together with Danny Ricciardo and goes into the gravel. That was the low point. But he's third in Miami, fourth in Spain, second in Monaco. Of course, Azerbaijan in general was just a weekend for Ferrari to forget with that double DNF. Then he comes back this week. I mean, he should have been on the front row, but except for a moment of brilliance from Fernando Alonso, which we already talked about. Comes home second in the race. You know, he pushed Max really, really hard, but he's got the fastest lap on top of it. I mean, since that low point, I mean, his worst result since Imola, which was like the low point of his season to date, I mean, his worst result since then was a fourth. So, I mean, his season's turned around pretty good. But, I mean, I guess we kind of like get a little bit fixated on what Carlos was doing 2 months ago. Yes. But, you know, just to talking about Carlos and that battle that he had with Max is, I think we can say now that Max is really maturing as a driver. I mean, I did not really feel that. I mean, obviously he must have felt the pressure. He must have known how close Carlos was. But I mean, we didn't see the things that we saw from Max that we saw earlier in his career, that even though there was a bit of gap between himself and the car behind him, you know, how he'd always kind of like drift a little bit to the left or to the right, you know, going into a corner, whatever the situation was. I mean, he was just focused on just doing what he needed to do. He wasn't really distracted. I just really felt that was a really confident, really assured, mature driver that's really driving very well. I mean, you look at Max, I mean, his worst results since Imola was third in Monaco, and he's won every race since then. I mean, he's driving great as well. So, you know, it was good stuff to see those two going at it. And, you know, like you say, I mean, Carlos's claim that he was the fastest guy on track, a little bit subjective, but, you know, I kind of like to hear those things, because he was saying things like that earlier in the year, that, you know, he wanted to be challenging Charles a little bit more. I mean, we haven't really seen that battle between the two Ferrari drivers yet for various different reasons, but I think he really did well the whole weekend in Montreal.
Yeah, he did, for sure. I mean, for Charles, I mean, it's such a difficult weekend, right? You know, you show up after what happened in Azerbaijan, and then you're faced with this issue. You know, you take the your third power unit, and then you're running an old turbo, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, that this thing isn't even going to last a full race distance, because you've got this, you know, weird engine combination that you've decided to bring to the track. And he's hinting to me, like in our sit down interview, that things may change, you know, throughout the rest of the weekend, and it could be strategic.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armorall, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armorall products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at Armorall.com. Armorall, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And for them to think that this was the right weekend to do it and to be strategic with it because of how you can pass here at the Canadian Grand Prix, at the end of the day, I mean, you know, speaking with him, Ferrari let him down. Like, it was the team that let him down. It wasn't Charles Leclerc that let anybody down. He did his job. He took that big penalty, a new internal combustion engine, a new turbocharger, a new MGUK, a new MGUH. He took a massive penalty that put him all the way in the back, fought his ass off to get close up to the front again. Pit stop blunder by Ferrari costs this guy potentially getting onto a podium position. He thought, in his mind, he thought that P5, he could have done much better. That's basically what he said to me. Like,
yeah,
if it wasn't for those blunders.
I totally agree with that, that take that he had. I mean, I thought it was interesting too, because after the safety car period at the towards the end of the race there, he ends up behind the two Alpines. He's behind Fernando, mm-hmm. who's behind Esteban. And I thought, well, you know, if he has any hope of trying to like push George and Lewis, he's got to clear these guys really, really quick. He gets stuck behind them for a couple laps and he gets by first Fernando. Then he gets, past Esteban, and then I'm looking, I think there's like about 4 seconds. I'm like, well, you know, he's still got about a dozen laps, maybe he can get close to George, and then maybe he can, maybe in the last couple laps, maybe he can push him a little bit. But it didn't work out like that. I noticed I think it was maybe about like 7-8 laps to go, and like one lap he took about a second out of George's the gap between himself and George Russell. And then he brought it down from about 4, and then he got to about 2.5 seconds, and then it just sort of stayed there. I guess he just figured, you know, it is what it is now. You know, the opportunity to try and push for anything better than fifth have just evaporated. But, you know, you raise a great point, because it was there for Ferrari again, and again they let themselves down. And it's just, sometimes it really just strikes me, it just, sometimes they can just be their own worst enemy. It's either call on the pit wall, it's something that happens in the pits, or it's something that happens, you know, with the reliability or the car, or sometimes it's something that the driver does. I mean, you can go back and, you know, we just mentioned Carlos putting it into the gravel in Australia. So, I mean, they've been, you know, their own worst enemies at times, and it's got to be so frustrating for them, because the car is obviously competitive, and it's still, I mean, to be as close as he was to Max at the end, of course, you know, that gap is maybe, I wouldn't say artificial, but I think maybe that's, it obviously flatters Ferrari a little bit, because with like, what was it, 12 laps to go, and you got the safety car, so that compressed the running order quite a bit. So there is that. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Carlos, because it was an exciting finish and he really gave it his all. But again, there's just there was more opportunity for more points out there for Charles, despite starting at the back of the grid. And I mean, he drove great on Sunday. I mean, let's not take away from it. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, it's only a fifth, but look where he came from. And I mean, we termed the phrase the Frankenstein power unit last week when we talked about what they were going to have to do for Charles going into Montreal after what happened in Azerbaijan last weekend. And when you talk about, you know, taking this and putting that on it and taking this from there and putting it here, it's just like, oh, come on, guys. It's just, I can understand why they're frustrated. And when you look at the constructors, when you look at the drivers, that gap between Ferrari and Red Bull, between Charles and Max, it should be a lot smaller than it is. I mean, they've left so many points out there.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And now this championship is just really starting to get away from them, right?
Yeah.
They need to have some bad things happen to Max for them to catch back up and to close the deficit. I mean, I know there is a lot of races left, but Max isn't going anywhere. He's on another level right now. The maturity that he's shown within the car, his ability now to just manage everything, including his emotions, and as well as managing and controlling the lead of a race, is spectacular. He is in championship form. He looks incredible. His demeanor is so much better than what it used to be too, Mark. Just even talking to him is just, he's almost like a different guy, and he's operating at such a high level. And if you're Charles Leclerc and if you're Ferrari, that's got to scare the crap out of you, man.
Totally.
Because you have to go up against that, and you're going to have to try and overcome that if you want to win a championship. And that's not going to be easy. I even, you know, saying to Charles, you know, I asked him like, what is this like on the track between you guys? Like, all right, is this a fierce rivalry? Like, what do you think it is? And he doesn't see it as that just yet, but he feels that if this championship does end up getting close, he feels that it's going to get nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I said, like, yeah, well, you guys ever go for beers after? And he's like, oh yeah, well, we'll see. Right. Jokingly, but you know, they're not going for beers after.
Yeah.
Right, Mark? I mean, at the end of the day, this is a, these two are two fierce alpha drivers. And I think that Max Verstappen is going to have to run into some extreme, unfortunate things for Charles Leclerc to even have a chance at getting back into this thing.
Well, that's the thing that I've said about Mercedes for years, right? It's just like, I don't want to bet against Lewis. I don't want to bet against Mercedes because, you know, number one, he's a great driver in a great car. They've always, you know, their strategy's on point. And, you know, when it comes to the, you know, the situation, well, you know, for so-and-so, whoever it is, Sebastian, for Max or whoever, to close that gap in the championship between himself and Lewis, you know, prior to 2022, you know, you're going to have like an unprecedented run of unfortunate incidents, either be it you know, like a coming together on the track or reliability issues, like all these things that just never happened to Mercedes, you know, that the I mean, they were so good for so long. And I mean, sure, and this is a great time to talk about it. I mean, obviously, yeah, right at the start of the season, Red Bull had reliability issues. I mean, that was highlighted in race one in Bahrain, where you get right down to the last couple of laps and both of those Red Bulls, you know, they just pull up and then double DNF right there. Max had another one a couple of races later. And then this afternoon, I mean, well, let's, before we even get to that, I mean, they've been pretty solid since then. I mean, they you know, Max has been driving great. Sergio has been driving great. I mean, they've been bringing points home like they're going out of fashion. And, you know, they just seem to get better and better every weekend. And then we talked about how Lando had a weekend that he's going to want to forget about. Sergio had almost identical the same weekend. I mean, obviously, he didn't make it out of Q2. And then he only lasted 7-8 laps in the race itself when the gearbox let go. And it was just weird the way that it happened. I mean, he was just going around the backside of the circuit and then all of a sudden box full of neutrals and he just kind of like coasts off the track. I mean, can you give us a little bit more information? That not really. I mean, Christian was not very forthcoming. I mean, obviously that was during the race when they interviewed him. Mm-hmm. They said, of course, we got to get the car back to the pits and look at it. I mean, all they're saying now is gearbox. So who knows, mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Still undetermined at this moment. But yeah, for Sergio Perez, obviously a hit in the championship for him.
Yeah.
Especially when, you know, we want to see this thing get close, and you know, you're having all these championship battlers, you know, start to just fall off the map, and reliability issues just kicking in for everybody except for Max. I mean, fair enough, he had some at the beginning of the season, but you know, the reliability issues that some of these teams are facing now is just a little bit unheard of. I mean, poor Sergio Perez, it's hasn't been good times for him, Mark. This was a really tough weekend for him.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, especially after the last three races. I mean, he's got a pair of seconds, and of course, he won in Monaco a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Sergio's driving in the form of his career. I mean, he's finally settled in nicely at Red Bull. I mean, they got that 1-2 punch with the drivers that they haven't had since 2018 and before, when it was Max and Danny Ricciardo. I mean, everything was, you know, setting up to be another, you know, dominant weekend for the Red Bulls. And I mean, obviously Max wins the race, he gets pole. I mean, he you know, extends his lead in the championship over both his teammate and Charles Leclerc, but you know, it's not all that rosy. I mean, the gap between, I mean, the one that we're kind of looking at now is Charles and Sergio, because there's only 3 points between them. But that's not the Ferrari Red Bull driver battle that we want to see. I mean, everybody's dialing it back and thinking about Saudi, that great, what was it, about 10 laps or whatever it was, right at the end of the race there with Max and Charles just going at it. I mean, it was just like that just, you know, really, I think, excited everybody. And we just have not seen that, you know, since then. Okay, so we've talked about Ferrari, we've talked about Red Bull. Let's talk now about Mercedes, because this was like one of these stories I was kind of thinking about going into this this weekend, and I was kind of thinking, well, depending on what happens, if it's a bad thing, it was like, do we sit down and say, you know, is it time to talk about Lewis Hamilton? And I was almost thinking a little bit of a negative context. I'll be honest. I did not have a good feeling about Lewis after Azerbaijan. I know he had like, I mean, that was like the hardest, you know, fourth place he's probably ever achieved in his career. But I just did not. I was just getting a lot of negative vibes from him afterwards. I knew that, you know, Lewis is a warrior. I knew that it would take something extreme for him not to come to Montreal, but for him to get onto the podium and, you know, to do better than his teammate, because I mean, he's struggled compared to George throughout the season. I mean, George obviously is still ahead in the driver's championship, currently fourth with 111 points compared to 77 for Lewis. But I mean, in the last couple of races, I mean, let's go all the way back to Imola. He didn't finish in the points. He had a 13th. Since then, he's kind of like, it's been a bit of up and down, but he had a 6th, a 5th, an 8th at Monaco, and then Azerbaijan 4th, and then 3rd today. And then, you know, George, he's had 3 podiums this year. But this weekend, I just kind of felt... I felt like we saw a little bit of the old Lewis back. I mean, obviously he was able to kind of hang with Max and Carlos at the end. Of course, you know, the asterisk there is the same that I gave for Carlos and Max because of the safety car period. But I just, you know, watching Lewis and hearing him speak after the race was over, he just seemed. To me, it almost felt like a guy that had like a weight fall off of his shoulder. He seemed a lot more relaxed. He seemed a little bit, the frustration wasn't there. Just, it seemed like the Lewis Hamilton we all know.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought that this was all Lewis Hamilton on Sunday. This was classic Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he dragged this position out of this car. I mean, they still have the bouncing. They're still suffering with that. It's just not as severe as it was in Azerbaijan. Now, Lewis was actually running some experimental components on the car over the weekends. They didn't really work as well as they liked them to have. And it's just a very difficult car to get sorted out and to get into an operating window. And just speaking with him afterwards, you know, it just still sounds like they're struggling to sort this thing out. Like they're still haven't figured it out where it's, if you go the wrong direction in setup, just a little tiny bit, it throws the car right out of the window, just literally throws it right out of the window, which is the strangest thing ever. And it's not just Lewis saying this, like George, you know, talking to George too. I mean, saying the exact same. They're both saying the exact same things. Now, for Mercedes, there is a bit of a silver lining with this coming up to Silverstone. At least it's got a lot of medium to high speed corners, and this Mercedes car does actually run quite well on those types of tracks. It's the slower corners. It's the slow to medium corners. It's bumpy straightaways. It's rough track, rough surfaces that's really increasing the bouncing of this race car for them. And I think coming into Silverstone, I think they're going to have a good shot at capturing some more good results and trying to really just pull away in the championship, you know, for that third place, just start to really pull away. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, for this team, that's exactly what they need. And then eventually they can start making a decision on, you know, what do they want to do, right? Do they want to continue with this car the way it is, right? Or are they going to make a change and go with something else, Mark?
Well, that's great. I mean, that you point that out, because there's a quote here that from Lewis, and he said, quote, "It's been such a difficult year for me personally in terms of the car. Qualifying was emotional for me, and get back in the garage, we were like, wow, this is beautiful for us. Then to have a strong race just gives me so much hope and confidence going forwards. There is potential in this car, but it's got a really small working window. And if you don't get it all perfect, it's all over the place, and there's a really hard thing to navigate through. But the team did a great job this weekend." So, you know, I mean, again, we've talked about this among ourselves quite a bit, that this W13, it's not really a car that they want to give up on. They still feel like there's potential in it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, are they going to be able to extract all that potential before the end of the year? But, I mean, you look, okay, it, obviously, the you look at the comparison between George Russell and Lewis Hamilton. Obviously, Lewis has had more issues with this car with George. I mean, George obviously has had some pretty good results. I mean, his worst finish this year was a P5. But I mean, when you still look at it, I mean, you know, George has been in the points every race. Lewis has been in the points every single race except for Imola, I think it was. But the other thing that's interesting, despite all the struggles that Mercedes has had, compared to their other rivals at Ferrari and Red Bull, they have not had a DNF. So this car maybe isn't operating the way that they want it, or they think that they can extract from it, but it's also as reliable as hell. So, I mean, there's some good things going on there. And on top of that, they're only 40 points behind Ferrari in the constructors, which really isn't that far considering how much racing we still have in front of us.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, it's like I was saying, right? It's like, what happens when they go to a track like Hungary, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's not going to be a track that really suits them. They're going to get steamrolled.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, you know, the purpose of it is to go to some of these tracks and have a bit of a disadvantage, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen. Not to just show up and get absolutely pounded. And I think at the end of the day, that could be what happens to them when they go to a track like Austria, when they go to a track like Hungary. You know, it could be a absolute disaster for them. So that's where I think, like, they have so many other question marks, you know, with this car. Both drivers are doing an incredible job. No questions asked. Lewis is definitely playing the team game by running all these experiments that he's been running the past few races. George is at the peak of his powers at the moment, doing a phenomenal job. Lewis just dragged a P3 out of this car. You know, Toto's still upset about this whole car. The mechanics and the crew just can't seem to figure it out. I keep coming back to this, Mark. It's just, there's going to be a moment in this season where this team just simply either moves forward with this thing or just gives up when they can't even figure it out and get it working properly.
You know, I wish I had a time machine. I could fast forward to February 2023 to the launch of the, like, next year's Mercedes and see, you know, are they going to go with the same concept that they have with this year's car? Are they going to kind of go in the direction, say, like Red Bull and Ferrari have gone? Is it going to be somewhere in the middle? But I mean, these are the things, these are the questions that are going to be answered. And these are the things that are going to evolve over the races and the weeks and months ahead. And 100%. I mean, you know, when you go with something that, I mean, when you look at the Mercedes compared to the other front runners, I mean, it is a radically different design. It's a radically different concept. And when you try to do something that radically different than everyone else, you know, if it works right out of the gate, I mean, great. But if not, then it's just like, okay, well, we thought it was going to do this, but it's not. And we don't know why it's not doing what we expect it to do. And try to do that, you know, over the course of the season in a cost cap world, I mean, good luck to you. I mean, that's, you know, just seems like, I'm glad that I'm not, you know, responsible for that. But, you know, that's also why I'm not getting paid anything close to what Toto Wolff is earning for a paycheck, and deservedly so. Yeah.
Okay. Oh my God.
Let's move on to a couple other topics here. Let's talk quickly just about Fernando Alonso. He was awarded a time penalty and, well, a bit of a disappointing end to an otherwise a pretty decent weekend for him. So tell us what happened to Fernando right at the end of the race here, Tim.
Yeah, it sounded like he was having some engine issues of some kind towards the end. He still felt that he was much quicker than Esteban Ocon, but there were no... No, he said that there was no real team orders on his part. I mean, what's he going to do, right? He's not going to be able to get past Esteban. There was no way. The pace just wasn't there. He knows that. The blocking maneuver that he ended up pulling, I mean, he's weaving all over the racetrack. He deserves that 5-second time penalty. You can't block that much. It was pretty bad. But I mean, I think, you know, like I said at the top of the show, for the team, it's just a good confidence boost for them, and good confidence boost for Esteban as well, because he's been trying to find his way, you know, with this new car over the past few races, and it looks like it's starting to chip away at it. But, you know, these are the types of finishes that this team needs, and this driver pairing needs to believe in what they have and to make the team go forward, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, disappointing for them. But, you know, on the whole, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, Alpine has been quietly getting the job done, and will be fun to watch them the rest of the year. Let's talk about the Canadian boys. Lance gets into the points in P10. Nicholas Latifi said that despite some poor results this year, this weekend was very special. So I'm sure you've had a chance to talk to these guys quite a bit over the past couple of days. Let's start with Lance. Obviously didn't qualify very well, brings it home into the points. Okay, it's only in 10th, but, you know, I think that's a pretty good result from obviously building on what was not the greatest of Saturdays.
Yeah, and that's a funny thing about this Aston Martin car. I mean, there's it's got pace. I mean, we've seen it. The times that Seb's putting up in free practice 3, free practice 2, I mean, you know, those are not, you know, phony lap times. That's legit performance. They've got something here. And I think it's just going to take some time for them to work it out. Now, you know, having the issues that they had in qualifying with the tire, setting the back, obviously. But whenever Lance gets into P17 in Canada, he always seems to come away with points. But at the same time, the team put him on a very excellent a strategy. I mean, he ran a similar strategy to what they ran in 2019 with that one-stop strategy and just leaving Lance out and just letting him go. You have to take your hat off to him, because that's a really difficult thing to do, to keep that hard tire alive for as long as he did. Like, he kept it alive, Mark. I mean, he had drivers breathing down his neck. He was stuck in the DRS train for quite a while, didn't make any mistakes, which was great. I mean, you know, you have to commend the guy. He did a great job in the race.
Because he came into this weekend. Sorry, just to jump in there. He pitted in the mid 40s, did he not?
He did. Yeah, it was close. That's incredible. I was going to say, like, you know, just over 45. I don't have the exact number of the exact lap.
You're
that he
pretty
came
close
in,
within a lap or two. Yeah.
He was deep into it. He was very deep into the stint. And that tire management skill that he has is getting better. I mean, he was absolutely incredible in that regards. And safety car, obviously, you know, playing into his hand at the same time, which was great. And yeah, he needed this. You know, it's been a tough couple races. You know, if we go all the way back to like Monaco, it's been tough. Like when they brought this upgrade, it hasn't been easy for him. Yeah, I think moving forward, you know, for we could touch on Nicholas too at the same time. Like, just difficult race. Like, just didn't have the confidence to push the car, but knew that. I think he knows that. Like, he can't crash the car anymore, right? Like, he can't go out and put the car on the limit. They are supposed to have upgrades coming. So if they're crashing the car, the upgrades aren't going to come, right? It's going to affect him. And so for Nicholas, there's a margin there he has to play with. Like, he can't go over a certain margin. He's got to keep things within a certain margin, right? And once he starts pushing things, like race car drivers do like to do, that's when you're going to run into problems. And, you know, he just can't afford to do that right now. He's got to get to the upgrades, Mark. He's just got to make it to the upgrades, and we'll see what happens.
So what does a driver like Nicky do? Like, what sort of positive do you take away from a weekend like this? And maybe, you know, maybe from the bigger picture. I mean, it's his first ever race in Canada. I mean, obviously, it's been canceled for the past couple of years because of COVID. So, I mean, you got to take something positive away from the weekend if you're Nicholas Latifi. And what is it? What does Nicky take away? If there's one thing you can feel good about, what would it be?
I think just having his family around, to be perfectly honest with you. He hasn't seen them in a really long time.
Wow.
They haven't been together for a really long time. I mean, COVID has kept everybody apart, especially Nicholas from his family. Same with Lance. Lance had a huge family contingent there as well. And same thing for him, right? It's just getting your family and friends to finally together to enjoy something. And for Nicholas seeing aunts, uncles, seeing his brothers, sisters, I mean, it was good for him. I think he needs it. You know, he's coming back to Toronto for a bit before he moves on to back to the UK to continue on with the season. And I think for Nicholas, it's been busy. Like, he's just been working like every single day in the sim, going over data. Whenever he's not in the race car, he's doing something race car related. Like, and same goes for Lance, both of them working their asses off. So for Nicholas, just got to hope that those upgrades come and they work. But I think for him, getting to see and being around his family was a big boost for him. That's what I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point, and something honestly I hadn't even thought about, but just another indication of how much COVID has messed up things so much over the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Okay. A couple of quick things I want to talk about. I want to talk about a couple of comments that Toto Wolff made before we get, maybe this is kind of a heavy way to finish the show, but one thing I wanted to ask you again, just from a driver's perspective, I mean, right at the top of the show, you talked about, you know, all the things that everybody in the F1 world loves about coming to Montreal. But I noticed over the course of the weekend, a number of the drivers said how much that they like Circuit Gilles Villeneuve. What is it about this track that drivers love?
Just old school. It's an old school circuit. You know, you make a mistake, you're going to pay the price. Drivers love it. You know, because they love those margins. They love just teetering on the edge of the limit, just the knife's edge. Wall of Champions is a perfect example. Yep. I mean, that's like threading the eye of a needle at 200 kilometers an hour. You know, how much curbing do you dare take? And you know what the consequence is. It's waiting for you just on the other side of the chicane. So, yeah, I think in terms of the track, it's an old school driver's track.
Yeah. I got to ask you this, like maybe this is just cynical me speaking, but you know, the big Bonjour Quebec on the side of the Wall of Champions, they're trolling us, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, I can't remember. Like, I think it used to read, if I'm not mistaken, Bienvenue au Quebec.
I think that's
what it used to read a long time ago. And that's what you would see when you pounded into that thing.
If it's intentional, I think that's brilliant. I love it.
I love it.
Just before we wrap things up here, the couple of things I want to get to. We got one listener question, but I wanted to ask you about these questions that Toto Wolff made in Intersport with Autosport.com. So I'll read you the whole thing. So it's just this this whole TD and the whole porpoising thing. So he's a little bit, it seems he's pretty irritated, annoyed about it. So I'll just read it and get your reaction to it. So Toto had the following to say, quote, "This is a sport where you're trying to keep a competitive advantage or gain it. But this situation has clearly gone too far. All the drivers, at least one in every team, have said that they were in pain after Baku, that they had difficulty in keeping the car on the track or blurred vision. Team principals trying to manipulate what is being said in order to keep the competitive advantage and trying to play political games when the FIA tries to come up with a quick solution to at least put the cars in a better position is disingenuous. And that's what I said. I'm not only talking about the Mercedes, all of the cars suffered in some way or another in Baku and still do it here. The cars are too stiff, the cars bounce, or whatever you want to call it. We have long-term effects that we can't even judge, but at any time, this is a safety risk, and then coming up with little manipulations in the background or Chinese whispers or briefing the drivers is just pitiful," end quote. So obviously, Toto not entirely happy about the situation.
Yeah, no, I mean, here's one of the things. Well, the TD got issued at a funny time for some of these teams. You know, speaking with Otmar Szafnauer, I mean, they were this thing's getting issued, you know, in the UK evening, and it's getting issued in Canada. I believe it was around early afternoon when this thing's getting issued. And one of the things that Szafnár kept bringing up was the fact that how late this thing got issued, and the fact that, you know, there were some teams that were able to bring floor stays for their cars, which would help. And Alpine didn't have time to do that. They didn't have time to get that little piece of car equipment made in time. And so there's a lot of politics that is just swirling around this TD. I mean, there was an apparent yelling match during the team principals meeting with Stefano Domenicali down at the F1 tent.
Oh, wow.
Late on Saturday, apparently. And, you know, it was Toto Wolff, and I believe Mattia Binotto was involved. Same with Christian Horner. And again, you know, how much is Mercedes pushing for these things, right? And it's kind of like, who's the FIA listening to?
That's a million-dollar question, right?
Yeah, because I talked to, you know, as I talked to some of these drivers, some of the drivers I spoke with, they weren't complaining. They even said that they were fine. They even said, like, yeah, you know, if you're having some porpoising, it would suck. But at the end of the day, these are the rules and the regulations. I mean, you can't just go and change all of that. You're throwing out the entire, you're basically just throwing out rules for no reason.
Yeah.
And same with the team principals. Franz Tost was extremely outspoken on all of it. And if the drivers for him are having trouble, then get out of the sport. That's basically what he's saying. Like, sports are tough. They're tough on your body. You're going to get beat up. You're going to get broken and all these sorts of things. And he does have a point. I mean, you know, basketball players, football players, hockey players. I mean, the body deteriorates. It's a rough sport. Racing is rough. It is just rough. It's just natural. It's just, that's the way it is. But at the end of the day, I mean, you do have to take driver safety into account, right? But when the FIA puts this TD out, it's not specific, right? They don't say how much, or they don't tell you, are they going to raise it like this? Or are they going to raise it like this? They didn't even give a number. And so, like, how does that work? Okay, so if you're going to issue this thing, well, then what's going to be the number that you're going to raise someone's ride height to?
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. I thought the TD was, it was vague, and it didn't really say too much other that they were going to measure, what was it, the vertical oscillation. You know, I think that's the technical term for porpoising. But of course, as with anything else in Formula One, it's a lot of it's politics and posturing, and I guess that's part of the reason that that we love it, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you know, Tim, it's getting pretty late there for you. I know that, you know, you've been busy all week. Morning. And I mean, you put out a ton of great content over the past several days. You guys have just been killing it there at TSN. We've really been enjoying it, but we're not going to let you go. We got a question here for you specifically from Alex McWilliams. And Alex's question is, who wins in a race? Bottas driving my Infiniti QX60 or me after a weekend of training in his Alpha F1 car?
Oh, gosh. You get a week in it, though. Or, sorry,
a weekend. Weekend. Yeah.
I would say a week in the F1 car. Weekend in the F1 car. I think you'd win.
That would be interesting. Now, we're all.
I honestly think you would, because you're getting a full weekend in this thing, right? So you can slowly chip away at it.
Yeah.
As long
as
you don't bin it.
You know, we're assuming that Alex is actually, you know, can actually fit in the car. I mean, I'd be lucky if I could get one foot in there, you know, let alone both and be able to steer it, you know, actually be able to get into the cockpit. But yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, if, you know, just take away like all the things, you know, being the right size and height and everything to fit into a Formula One car. If you actually had a couple of days of actually training in one of these cars, like what could you be able to, I mean, obviously you would not be able to push it, but how much would you be able to, what would you be able to do in a Formula One car with just, if you walked in straight out of the sim or straight out of the parking lot?
I would say, like, if I had, if I was in shape, like racing shape, I mean, I'm not in shape. Like, I had a bad injury last year and I put on a ton of weight. I've been trying to lose it. And, if I was in better shape and if I got to spend, 3 days in the sim, and then if I was able to spend, get some decent track running, in the car, I think I could do pretty good. I'm not going to say I'm like, Charles Leclerc or something like that, but I think I could qualify. I think I could qualify for a race.
Wow. So how long do you think you could go before like the G's would really start affecting like the neck and everything like that? Would that be something you'd notice immediately?
Yeah. I'd be toast immediately. Yeah. It wouldn't last very long. Like I said, like I'd have to, there'd be a big process to this. We're talking like 7 months of physical training. and that's it. Like just focused on that, sleeping and eating right.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we're talking like, I would say just a good 3-4 days of really long, solid sim time, shifter carts. And then like a full weekend in the car. I think I could do it. Yeah. I think I could.
It's not like the 70s where you, crush a case of beer on a Saturday night and smoke half a carton of Lucky Strikes, and then party all night and then show up to the circuit and go and drive in a Grand Prix on Sunday afternoon.
100%.
Things have changed a little bit in the past 40 or 50 years.
100%.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tim, let's wrap it up there. Thanks again. Like I said, you guys did great work at the track all weekend long. It was great to see. And, it was the race lived up to the hype. And I think that's what we all wanted for our first race since in Canada, at any rate, since 2019. So before we go, let everybody at home know where they can follow you and listen to what you got going on and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So TSN Racing Pods available wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on social media at Tim Harani. Gonna have some fun stuff on social coming out over the next week or so for sure. And just gonna be getting ready for the British Grand Prix that will be coming up here in a few weeks' time. But just moving into my new place and getting settled in there. And Mark's given me some pretty handy things on creating a bit of a podcast studio. So I'm going to be chipping away at that this week and got a new bed to move in. So
all that fun moving stuff.
Moving stuff. I've been moving stuff for the last month. It's 1:40 in the AM here in Ontario, and I got to be up in 3 hours to catch a flight back to Toronto. So,
all right, buddy. Well, it's time to cut you loose. And if you want to follow our show, we're Scuderi F1 Pod. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, everywhere we listen to podcasts. And you can find us on social at Scuderi F1 Pod or email us at scuderif1pod@gmail.com. And on behalf of myself and Tim Harani and my absent co-host, Mr. Mark Hamilton, thanks for listening. Have a great week, and we'll catch again in a couple of days. Bye for now.